An engineering company reported that 10 years ago, it replaced 250 workers with 9 robots. Now, the company still thrives and is still a major employer in the area and performs well against its national and international competitors. Now, if we write history and the company decides not to invest in those robots and continues to produce goods using its human staff, well, gradually, competitors do introduce robots and the cost of producing their goods goes down. Our company now starts to lose orders as it can't remain competitive in the marketplace. So it downsizes a few times and then eventually closes with the residual damage that generally occurs in the local community when that happens. So labour saving systems have already eliminated millions of man hours in the UK, making remaining workers more productive. But artificial is simply another tool that any company can leverage to achieve more with a smaller workforce or completely replace some teams. For instance, a company I work for, we recently replaced our accounts clerks who managed invoices with an AI tool that read the invoices automatically and updated the finance system. Now, this was pretty new technology at the time, but most modern finance systems now have a similar capability. And many businesses have chosen not to hire for these straightforward jobs anymore. Now, a survey of 697 companies by Metro G, who are a research advisory firm, revealed that companies that didn't implement AI in 2023 hired about 89% more agents than others in their contact centers. When I was introduced to contact centers, this did lead to 36% of companies laying off an average of 26% of the workforce. And that was just within 1 year. Now, these statistics are concerning and they reflect the impact on call centers, which, to be honest, have already faced challenges from outsourcing, understaffing, automation, much more than other professional services. And while other businesses have successfully reduced headcount and expenses, there's an underlying issue. In 1914, Henry Ford boosted his factory workers' wages to $5 a day, and it's supposedly to help them afford to buy a Model T. However, the real reason was really to lower employee turnover and prevent these workers from leaving and joining Dodge. Now, this illustrates a harsh truth. If employment rates drop like these, as we've seen in contact centers, companies globally will face decreased revenues because jobless individuals can't buy things. They don't have the purchasing power. Even employed people do tend to cut back when there is a fear of job losses. However, if companies can use AI to increase efficiency and redeploy the workforce to grow the business, then this is going to be a win-win. A win for the growth in the economy, and that's certainly a win for the employees of the company. But what if the company can't introduce a robot or AI or make itself more efficient? Well, one growing trend is for companies to focus on creating products for the rich. Now, the wealth gap is widening all over the world, with the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. So some companies are betting their future and generating income only from their wealthy customers. Now, this might seem extreme, but it's already unfolding. If we think about video game sector, the industry is capitalizing on what's called the freemium model, where most players get the game completely free, but a small number, which they refer to as whales, spend substantial amounts of money, sometimes thousands of pounds, on in-game features. Now, these players, they're essential because they provide social opportunities for those who play and enjoy the status and the perks. Now, in an era where budget-friendly entertainment is in demand, the gaming industry has realized that their profits actually do come from catering to those with disposable income rather than from their general population. But as automation likely replaces more jobs, the value of labor may also diminish, while the worth of income-producing assets may increase. Now, the rapid evolution of AI and automation makes the future unpredictable. But those investing in these technologies will need to recognize what the gaming industry has already learned. There's greater profit in targeting affluent customers, while everyone else serves generally as entertainment. Now, this trend isn't new. As AI advances, it will further amplify these issues that have been developing for years. Therefore, understanding the mechanics of money and how businesses adapt to a world where affordability becomes a challenge is crucial for our investments. Now, Lamborghini has sold more cars in the past decade than in its entire history. And this really highlights the growing market for luxury vehicles. There's simply a bigger marketplace for £300,000 plus cars. From Ferrari to luxury groceries, exorbitant gym memberships, hotels, and the rise of popularity of private jets and yachts, they're much more commonplace nowadays. It's true that billionaires are becoming wealthier. Those who maintained even a modest investment portfolio over the past 4 years have amassed significant wealth, really. Some have benefited from really clever and astute investments, while others just leveraged credit to take full advantage of these unprecedented asset bull market that we've been in. And few modern fortunes have been solely through hard work. Investing has shifted from being a means to secure your retirement to pretty much a necessity for maintaining quality of life for the rich. If automation continues to advance, it could reduce the value of human labor, since machines can perform tasks instead, whilst asset values would rise as business owners capitalize on this automated labor. Now, this scenario has led to people discussing things like UBI, universal basic income. And this is where a government payout provides basic needs for the individuals. And it's been proposed to sustain the economy if people can't earn income due to job or outsourcing or automation. But it creates a divide where individuals either rely on government assistance or belong to the wealthy class. And then recently, a report has been published where significant UBI experiments gave 1,000 residents in Texas and Illinois £1,000 a month with no conditions, while a control group of 2,000 received only $50. Now, this initiative aimed to measure spending decisions, and it was funded actually by Sam Altman from Open Research. And he'd expressed a concern over job displacement from technology. And while a study may have served as a good marketing tool for him and his organization, its findings still hold some value. Notably, those that received the £1,000 payment ended up earning less on their own compared to the control group when it accounted for the subsidy being removed. While all households earned more overall, researchers noted that many recipients actually reduced their working hours to focus on leisure and family. And they really did embody this kind of idealized vision of a future where machines do the work. Although mental health did improve for all the participants, the benefits diminished over time. Food security initially increased, and that there was a general rise in living. But this was eroded over time as prices increased. This reflected the slow and destructive impact of outsourcing, which turned many UK cities into almost ghost towns without any particular solutions for it, really. The ultimate goal for those investing in automation is kind of a utopian automated future, while a priority for everyone else is ensuring that we're not marginalized when that vision occurs. So how does this play out in helping us to pick better investments for our pensions? Well, you may decide that your hard-earned pension money should go to NVIDIA and AMD, who produce the chips that run the data centers that run the AI. Or maybe you invest in Microsoft, Google, and Amazon that actually run the data centers themselves. Or maybe the real value will be generated by those companies using the AI technology to streamline their operations. I mean, when I was young, there was a Blockbuster video shop on every corner. When a couple of guys invented Netflix, which was a CD sharing service back then, they offered to sell the business to Blockbuster. Blockbuster lacked the vision to change their business model. And now there is no Blockbuster, and Netflix pretty much beams out to all our living rooms. So how do we pick those smart companies with the talent in the boardroom to become a Netflix and not become a Blockbuster? Well, if I was a 20-something with a general investing account, I'd certainly try my best. However, as a 50-year-old something with a pension account, I don't see that kind of pursuit as suitable for me. I'll explain this with an example. When I was a kid and the Grand National was on, my dad used to split his bet over about 30 horses. He'd win every year. And by win, I mean, of the 30 horses, one of them would always win. And overall, the winnings from that race would about clear what he paid out on his bets. Meaning sometimes he won a little, sometimes he lost a little, but never lost everything and never won big. Now, rather than betting the ranch on the big winners in the AI race, why not bet on all the riders? The winners will be in that bunch. Now, this is easy in pension investing, and it's called index investing. And in most cases, investors should really focus on low-cost index funds as their main investment strategy. And I'll outline why a low-cost index fund is a good investment choice for me and for most individuals, especially for those currently using high-fee, actively managed funds, which is common amongst Britons. The rationale for index funds can be distilled into a few key points. Cost efficiency, diversification, investment returns, tax efficiency, and simplicity. Now, I'll begin with a background on index funds. So an index fund is essentially a collection of stocks that intend to mirror a particular market or a segment. For example, the S&P 500. And this represents US large companies. And it uses a capitalization weighted model where larger companies like Apple and Amazon have more influence than smaller ones. Now, this method is widely adopted for evaluating investment strategies and creating index funds that follow the indices. And throughout this discussion, I'm going to specifically refer to capitalization weighted market index funds rather than any other kind of strange composite. In contrast, actively managed funds attempt to outperform market indices by selecting certain stocks and timing market exposure. Over the past 60 years, index funds evolved from an obscure concept to a popular investment vehicle. And this was supported by a wealth of academic research since 1968, demonstrating that actively managed funds often fail to provide enough value to justify the higher fees, with most actually underperforming over time. The first point to support a low-cost index fund is their low fee structure. In the UK, the average fee for an index fund is 0.19%, whereas actively managed funds generally hover around the 0.85%. Now, these higher funds correlate with diminished investment returns without any identifiable advantages. And John Bogle, who founded Vanguard, highlighted that investing in lower costs generally lead to better outcomes. And Bill Sharp revealed that when accounted for costs, the average return of actively managed funds are lower than those of passively managed funds. Although some active managers might appear to add value pre-fees, once you take the fees into consideration, the truth generally reverses. Now, another reason funds are preferable is their superior diversification. Index funds hold a wide array of stocks across the market, a bit like my dad betting on 30 horses in the Grand National. Now, actively managed funds tend to concentrate on fewer stocks in their pursuit of outperforming the market. And although this selective strategy might yield high returns if you're lucky and successful, stock picking can lead to significant losses, as most stocks do underperform. I mean, data from 1926 to 2016 reveals that only a small fraction of US stocks exceeded returns of the safer investments like treasury bills. I mean, bet on all the horses and you're betting on all the winners. The second significant point is that index funds typically outperform the vast majority of actively managed funds. The 2023 study of US equity mutual funds from 1991 to 2020 found that over half of these funds underperformed compared to index funds. And after accounting for fees, only a small percentage managed to achieve better results. This includes more extensive studies that actually corroborate these findings over longer-term horizons. Investors frequently seek out actively managed funds, expecting past winning managers to keep performing well. But evidence suggests that this is just an illusion, really. While some active funds may have outperformed historically, there's little support for the idea that past success will translate into better future results. Index funds not only provide high returns, but are also tax efficient. And this is due to their lower turnover rate, which results in fewer taxable distributions for investors. Another advantage is simplicity. I mean, assessing the performance is really straightforward compared to actively managed funds, where performance can be quite challenging to interpret, really. Now, I focused generally on total market index funds. It's crucial to be cautious that not all index funds are equal. Some thematic index funds that track popular trends may perform poorly in the long run, like, you know, a green energy fund or a crypto fund. Hence, I choose capitalization weighted total market index funds. So in summary, low-cost index funds are diversified, cost-effective, and historically outperform most actively managed funds, where fees, when you take fees and taxes into consideration. But thanks for watching, and if you found this video helpful, please share it with others who may still be using high-fee actively managed funds. See you on the next one.